Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 185. I'm recording it on Monday, November 16th, 2009. The P10 level today is 19. That's not too exciting for stock investors. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Just As Soon. The title of the podcast is Stock Slaves. This is one of the sermon variety, the sermon type podcast. I do different types. I do number-oriented podcast. I do strategy-oriented podcast. Emotion-oriented, you know, behavioral finance, emotion-oriented podcast, all types. Every now and then I do a humor podcast, my personal favorite. There's one or two of those back there in the archives. But there's a group I do I call the sermon podcasts, where I say, bad middle-class investor, bad investing experts, straighten out your act. And this is one of those. Some people don't like those. And, you know, I don't actually like them. I sort of wish I didn't have to do them. They're emotionally draining. Because it's, I don't know. Maybe there's some people who like standing in front of a room and preaching a sermon. But Rob Bennett is not one of those. And so they're emotionally draining. I'd rather not do them, but I believe they're necessary. And more than I dislike sermons, I dislike seeing busted retirements. So I feel that it's part of my obligation. If I'm going to be a financial journalist reporting on investing developments, I think I need to report the problems in Investo World about reporting accurately what the historical data says on all these subjects. So I feel obligated in conscience to deliver some of these sermons, and I try to not do too many of them. I try to mix them in with other things, but I do them from time to time. But this is one that is in the sermon category. So if you don't like that sort of thing, it's, you know, I understand. Take a pass. Spend your time somewhere else. Go work the calculators. They're all just numbers. No sermons at all. Just accurate reports of the historical data, what the numbers say. The other prefatory note I wanted to make is that I had a different title for this one. Maybe I'll end up using the alternate title someday in the future, but I doubt it. I'm probably going to just move on. But I had been planning to do this podcast for a while now, a couple months. And because it was a sermon one, I tend to push it off. But the title I was planning to use until this morning was We Need to Forgive Ourselves. And that's a softer, sort of gentler, kinder title. Stock Slaves is sort of tough. Stock Slaves is sort of tough. Both are appropriate titles. The concept of We Need to Forgive Ourselves, you'll be hearing the podcast, I presume, so you'll hear why I would use that title. The idea here is that we have made terrible mistakes. We have caused the worst financial crisis, the second worst financial crisis in U.S. history, and it may become the worst in days to come in the event that stocks perform anything at all as they've always performed in the past. And we did this to ourselves, and we had lots and lots of warnings, and we just ran through the red flags. We just didn't care. We've destroyed ourselves. We've destroyed our families. We've destroyed our friends, our coworkers, our neighbors, our community, you know, our fellow community members. And, of course, we can't. There's no magic wand that any of us can wave and go back and redo it. That's done. I remember, I'll leave that aside. But there was a guy, well, I'll say it now that I made reference to it, I better say it. There was a fellow, I can't remember his name now. He used to post, Uncle Mick, he used to post almost daily at the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group. I was the moderator there. And Uncle Mick, I said something once that really stuck with me. And he said, People, you know, if all the things you're saying are true, and you know, we're going to have a stock crash because of this promotion of buy and hold, this reckless promotion of buy and hold for so many years. If all this is true, you know, no one's going to want to hear "I told you so" after that happens. And I read that and I said, yeah, that's true. No one, you know, I'm my sort of niche in the investing field is understanding the human emotions. That's my strength. And my understanding of human emotions tells me that what Uncle Mick said is true. No one's going to want to hear "I told you so." And so that's not helpful. It's not the way to go. But you know, that's part of the love. That's why I say we need to respond to what's happened with love and with honesty combined. The love part is no, you know, rubbing people's noses in their mistakes is not the way to go. And I think one of the ways of avoiding that is by acknowledging mistakes ourselves, you know, to say, look, I was taken in by the, you know, the gibberish, the goomba. So, you know, we're all human. We're all taken in. We're all capable of sin. We all live in the darkness. You know, we all see through a glass darkly. We all live in a fog to a large extent, even though we think we don't sometimes when we become too proud. So, that's how I try to handle that. But I always have Uncle Mick's admonition in mind. And yet, while I don't think "I told you so" is a helpful tone to take, not the common response. I mean, you know, it's impossible to believe that Rob Bennett's the only one who, you know, for whom the thought has occurred that, hey, maybe buy and hold wasn't such a hot idea. You know, maybe stocks for the long run was a little bit reckless. Maybe timing does work, you think? I don't think I'm the only one you know, has had that thought pass through his mind. I really don't, friends and neighbors. So why aren't people talking about it? Why are we pretending that the bankers did it? The bankers put on a funny nose and glasses, and they took all our money and they put it in a suitcase, and they got on a plane to the Riviera. The bankers did. Those bad bankers. That was not a nice thing to do, to take all our money and put it in a suitcase. No, bad bankers. Why? Well, people aren't talking about it because we're stock slaves. I want to, you know, I want to explore a little bit in this podcast why we're not talking about it. So I thought of, you know, I had been planning to approach it from this sort of soft angle for all the reasons Uncle Mick suggests, that you know, charity is called for here, not rubbing somebody's nose in it. And so I was thinking of going with a soft title. You know, we have to forgive ourselves. The idea here is, if we're all enablers, we enabled this situation, and we all need to, what do they call it? An intervention, a group intervention. You know, when someone's an alcoholic and they're just spiraling downward, that at some point responsible people step in and say, you know, look, we're not going to cover for you anymore. We're not going to, you know, call your boss and say, you know, you fell down the steps or whatever. You know, you're just going to have to deal with the consequences of your actions. And out of love, they do this, not out of, you know, anger. They do it out of love because the person has to face up to to what they've done. That's the spirit of the phrase I'd considered. We need to forgive ourselves. By forgiving ourselves, by overcoming the shame we feel about what we've done to ourselves for the past 30 years with all this gibberish, we can get past it. We can move to a new stage. We can get out of the economic crisis and get out of the political crisis and, you know, move forward to better things, to the golden age of middle class investing, using all the insights that we've learned for the past 30 years, but which we have denied ourselves, which we are not willing to let ourselves hear or let ourselves understand or let ourselves share with others or let ourselves, you know, use to form our investment strategies. So it was a perfectly good title, but it's a little bland. It's not very specific. And I my general rule with titles, I like provocative titles, and Stock Slaves is provocative and short. Short is good. And so I ultimately decided to go with it. And the only thing the only reason I think I didn't want to go with it is it sounds a little hard. But part of the theme here is that we're going to need to be a little bit hard to break the ice, you know, not with the intent of doing hurt, of causing hurt, with the intent of getting over this hurdle, this willful, blind, stubborn obstructionism of which a proud people, a foolishly proud people, which is what we are, not totally, but in regard to certainly stocks, certainly in regard to investing, we've become a proud, stubborn, self-hating people. In terms of that, you know, it may be that something provocative is called for, that we all need to work up the courage to be a little bit stronger, a little bit firmer, a little bit harder, and that way we'll get over that threshold, and then the love floods in. You know, then you have to embrace each other and show warmth and charity. But we have to get over that hurdle, and that hurdle is a 10-foot thick brick wall. And so that's the reason for the title. So it's a long explanation of why I chose a 2-word title, but I hope it maybe sets the stage for what's to follow. Now, I have, you know, my whole idea, you know, Rob Bennett, you know, I've gone through this before, but it doesn't hurt to repeat it. Never went to investing school. Never managed a big fund. What I know about stock investing is what you can learn about stock investing by figuring out how to get on the internet. That's pretty much it. Everything I've learned, I mean, I know the things everybody knows. You know, I read Random Walk Down Wall Street, you know, the basic stuff I knew all along. But everything I don't write about the basic stuff at the website. All I write about is unique stuff, which we've developed in the Retire Early and Indexing Discussion Board communities as part of the first 7 years of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. That stuff is the product of, I think it's four things. Let me see if I can list them. One, talking things over with my fellow community members, which is a powerful way to learn. Many people don't realize it, but the internet has opened up a new communications medium, which allows us to learn, you know, unearth incredible insights. So that's been the biggest thing. But secondly, the ability to research on the internet, so I can, you know, find out, you know, I see somebody discuss, say, you know, Cliff Asness or Andrew Smithers, and I can look it up and I can read the papers. And in the old days, you couldn't do that. You know, I guess you could have gone to the Library of Congress and found it, but who has the energy to do that? With the internet, you can follow up that way. So that's the second way I've learned. Third, using the historical data, because the historical data is public information today, and, you know, Robert Shiller has it all in his database, and you can just go through year by year. And with the help of John Walter Russell, I developed these calculators that sort of take the historical data and put it into a little package where you can just, you know, find out answers to questions in, you know, 20 seconds that would have taken you 6 months of work in the old days. So I've learned a lot that way. And fourth, just talking things over, thinking things over myself. And I do that in the podcast. That's a big reason I do the podcast. By going through an hour podcast, I have all kinds of new insights pop into my head because I have to organize the material. And you say something and it just, you know, it's the way your mind works. It just says, hey, here's this other thing. Did you ever think of, you know, exploring how they relate? So those are the four things. You know, everything you hear here is based on that. Well, but no stock investing school, you know, did not do it. Did not do it. No big fund, you know. And I am saying that people who went to stock investing school and managed big funds are wrong. I'm saying they're wrong. John Bogle, Bill Bernstein, Scott Burns, Jonathan Clements. Those are my four favorites, but there's lots more. But, you know, that's the idea. Saying they're wrong. I remember Michael Kitsis, great guy, financial planner out of Maryland. I had lots of conversations with him. I think I have a podcast called My Conversations with Michael Kitsis. And I have a bunch of blog entries. There must be a dozen of them. Michael was extremely helpful. Smart guy, good guy, warm guy. The thing I remember about Michael is his warmth. A lot of guys in this field, and women in this field, are very smart. You know, one thing I'll never say, people in the investing field are not smart. You'll never hear Rob Bennett say that. Smart people, hardworking people, I think they're good people. The ones I've run into are good people. You know, all of us have our dark side, but they're good people, as a rule. You know, there may be some I don't know, but the ones I know are good. That's all. You know, I don't know how many I've spoken to, a dozen, something like that. Those are good people. But not terribly warm as a rule. I don't think warmth is a personality trait that attracts somebody to investing analysis. That's my experience anyway. I'm sure some are. But as a rule, I don't see that. But Michael Kitsis struck me as a warm guy, and I liked it. I like to think of myself as a warm guy. More, you know, my emotions are more on the surface than some of these others. And Michael, I could relate to that way. Anyway, that's a side point. But I was going to say, Michael, I remember when I was talking with him, and this was some time back, and it was after the crash, though. I think it was maybe winter. That's my guess. But, at one point, Michael was going to some conference, and Bill Bangin was going to be there. Somebody else, I forget who the other one was. Bill Bangin and another safe withdrawal rate researcher. And I'm talking with Michael, you know, I'm saying all the safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong, these conventional studies. I'll speak at your conference. Michael was sort of the organizer. He was going to ask the questions. I said, Michael, I'll speak. Now, my recollection is he never even responded to that. He didn't say no. He didn't say yes. He just didn't respond. But, yeah. And it's one of these quote-unquote controversial ideas I put forward. What I remember hearing sometimes on discussion boards is, well, how dare you, Rob? You're not saying the experts are a little wrong. You're saying the whole model's wrong. You know, we just sort of got to start all over. And, that's right, yeah. And sorry, you know, sorry to upset the apple cart here, but if it's wrong, it's wrong. You know, it's not an opinion. It's a mathematical calculation. The numbers in these studies are wrong. They're not wrong by a little bit. They're wildly wrong. Doesn't it seem right that maybe we should start over, get it right this time? No? People planning their retirements according to it? So it makes all the sense in the world for me, in my mind, for me to appear with Bill Bangin and whoever else it was, John Gutton, I think was the other one. I'm not sure, but I think he's big in that field. You know, and of course they can have their say, fine, and I'll have my say, and people can listen. And I think Michael's reaction would be, well, you know, I know I look up Michael's name on the internet, and he's got like, you know, you see where his article appears, and it's got like 18 letters, you know, Michael's got a CDB degree and an ABC degree and an EFG degree and a DFR degree and, you know, an XYZ degree. He's got all these degrees. And that's nice, you know. Michael's smart. Michael's a good guy. But he's made mistakes. I can point out mistakes. And so I'm not sure what all those degrees add up to. I think they're supposed to impress people. They're supposed to intimidate people so you don't ask too many questions. And I've gone past that. I've gotten to a point where I was intimidated. And if the experts had always gotten it right, I would have remained intimidated. But when they couldn't get the safe withdrawal rate right, which is a number people use to plan their retirements, I sort of, you know, the magic of the ABCs and the EFRs and all this sort of wore off for me. So I just said, you know, Michael, you know, I'm willing to help out, I'm willing to speak. And he just, you know, brushed that off. And that's common. You know, that wasn't at all just him. I mean, totally common. So I don't know. That's sort of prefatory here. But the point is, we are in a state today where, the way I said it, I had a podcast with this title, our knowledge today of how investing works is primitive. We don't know what the heck we're doing. So, you know, we better stop fussing and fretting about who's got the ABC degrees and start thinking and start feeling. Start feeling, you know, concern for our friends and our neighbors and our family members and our fellow community members that, you know, they're going to suffer these horrible financial losses if we don't get our act together. And we don't have our act together. We don't know what we're doing. So Rob Bennett says. That's sort of where we enter. That's the stage here. And the question is, well, why? You know, the question is, how did we get to such a situation? Obviously, as I say, these people are smart as the Dickens. They're hardworking. They work long hours. You know, a lot of them are responsive to questions. You send them an email, they'll get back to you. They're, you know. So what's the problem? We're stock slaves. We have limited our knowledge. Did we do it deliberately? Well, yes and no. I'll talk about that. In a sense, it's deliberate. You know, nobody forced us to do it. But in a sense, not. You know, sort of, as I say, like an alcoholic. There's a section of my site entitled Stock Drunk, which is meant to suggest that we're hopeless. An alcoholic, you know, destroys his family, destroys his job, destroys his, you know, loses his money, loses his self-respect. But, you know, is he responsible for his actions? Well, you know, you tell me. You know, to some extent he is. We do have free will, I believe. So to some extent we're responsible, but I don't think you can hold him responsible for each and every act, because there really comes a point at which there's just so much pain that he just, you know, he's doing crazy things. He doesn't know what to do. He's desperate. He's scared. He's ashamed. Shame. Shame is an enslaving emotion. And I think there's a lot of shame out there today in InvestoWare. A lot of shame. It's probably the driving emotion. Fear is another one, but anger is another one. And anger both at others and at ourselves. But shame is real big. Anyway, I better start moving forward. I'm writing this book called Investing for Humans, and I sort of had it. You know, I did a run through. I've done I don't know how many drafts. There's different ways of measuring it, but I consider it a draft when I do my outline, because outlines take me a long time. I sweat them. So I did an outline, and then I did a draft, at least one, maybe two. You know, where I went. I think it was one the whole thing, and you know, there were other parts that had two. And so I've sort of gone through the jungle, you know, a couple times, but it's got a lot more, you know, it's not, I haven't worked on it now for a long time, over a year, but probably 2 years maybe, but I'll get back to it. I mean, I'm working on it by doing the podcast because I'm learning, but I'm not trying to put words on paper at this point, because the story got so big that I felt if I wrote it 2 years ago, it wasn't going to be the full story, and I don't want to rewrite it when I'm done this one. I want to, you know, shake the dust off my feet and move on, brother. I'll get back to it. But I can't get back to it until I have the story pinned down. And there's still, a lot of pieces are in place now, but not all of them. But when I wrote the draft, I had I have section titles, and there was one section title, and some of them are so explosive that I almost hesitate to use them. And then it's interesting. I'll hesitate to use them, and I'll sort of put them aside in this group, like it's self-censorship. I'll say, well, it's a good section title, but you can't say that, Rob. But I'll save them because I don't want to forget them. And then as time goes on and I learn new things, I say, well, yeah, maybe I will use that one. You know, maybe I'll just tell the truth. Well, what the hey? You know, that's kind of the way I operate. And there was one called The Devil is a Stock Guy. And that one causes trouble in two respects. One, it's telling people that stocks, sometimes stocks aren't good. Rob, you can't say that. Stocks for the long run, Rob. Timing doesn't work. So on the one hand, I'm going to get all the people that, you know, hate me for saying that stocks aren't always the best investment class in the world. Like everything else, there's some prices at which they're a good buy and some prices at which they're a horrible buy. So I've got that, but of course I do that. That's the whole book. So, you know, That's not so shocking. But then I throw on top of it religion, you know, the devil. I'm talking about the devil. And not and even people who like religion don't always like discussions of the devil. So not only am I you know, annoying all the people. I'm annoying all the people who think stocks for the long run, but then I'm also annoying all the people who don't like religion. And then even among the people that like religion, I'm annoying the ones who don't like the devil or don't like discussions of the devil. But it's a good section title. The devil is a stock guy. And the point of that is stocks are the best investment class out there in an overall sense. That part is true. That part they're right about, I think. Incredible returns with stocks. And it makes me so sad. The investors sort of fall into two categories. You have the people who believe in stocks for the long run, and they invest in stocks in this insane way, which turns this wonderful asset class into a nightmare. They make money for a time and then they lose it. Yeah. Which is devastating. Because they think they have it, they think they've made progress, and then they have to start all over again. And then you got this other group of people that sort of learns from that, but they learn the wrong lesson. Instead of learning to invest rationally, which would help, you know, cure the problem, they say, "Oh, stocks are the problem. I'm not going to invest in stocks and put all my money in CDs." And that's just as bad because they're delaying their retirements, you know, by years and years for no good reason. If you just consider price when buying stocks, all these problems go away. I mean, it's that simple. That's my message. What is it? 185 podcasts? And that's the message. Invest in, buy stocks the same way you buy everything else on planet Earth, and all these problems go away. That's it. That's the secret. You just got to not play mind games with yourself. Don't pretend stocks for the long run. Don't pretend buy and hold. Don't pretend timing never works. That's gobbledygook. The truth is just what common sense tells you. If you pay a good price for stocks, they're an amazing investment class for the long-term investor. If you pay an insanely high price, stocks are going to destroy you. And we ought to tell people this instead of hushing it up because the stock selling industry doesn't want people to know. So my point with that, the devil is a stock guy was title, subtitle was, you know, the devil likes to trick us. I teach a catechism class for, I think, 7-year-olds, my church. And I love it because their intellectual sophistication is at just my level. It's like the only group I've ever spoken to where I'm not intimidated. You know, it's like we're on the same wavelength. I'm right there with them. And so that makes me happy. Anyway. You know, it's sort of like, I don't know, certain things you master, you know, over the years. And it's like being 7, when I was 7, I was in a fog, you know, everybody's ahead of me. But now that I'm 53, I've sort of caught up to the 7-year-olds. With them, I'm like, hey, yeah, you know, we're all on the same page here, guys and girls. So I enjoy that. But the devil tricks us. Now, if you don't believe in God, you know, fine. Don't use words like the devil's, you know, call it ignorance or whatever you want to call it, you know, fine. But the devil tricks us. He doesn't trick us, you know, he doesn't trick us by showing up with a pitchfork and a tail and you know, hooves. You know, that wouldn't fool us, would it? You know, the devil showed up with all those things. We'd say, hey, stupid devil, go away. You know, I'm not going to fall for your tricks. The devil always, you know, he's always a wolf in sheep's clothing. He always appears under, you know, what's the song? Devil in a blue dress. That's the way the devil shows up. He's got this blue dress on and he looks pretty good. You know, he looks kind. He looks smart. He looks all these things. Exciting. So that's, you know, if only, you know, the devil doesn't come to us in the form of CDs. You know, the devil doesn't like CDs because CDs are just, you know, everybody gets what a CD is. You know, certificate of deposit. You know, you pay your money, you get what they say you're going to get, end of story. No, the devil says, in order for me to get into people's heads, I've got to have this really attractive asset class, this asset class that that provides a 6.5 real, average long-term return, which stocks do. They got that part right. They tell that part straight. So, got this incredibly appealing asset class, but there's gotta be a trick there, because I can't let them get the 6.5, because the devil hates us. You know, I think we all know that. Devil hates us. So, you know, oh, this is it. You know, yeah, I can get them all to like me with the 6.5. You know, they'll see that, they'll check that out, and yeah, they're going to love me. And then they're going to buy these stocks, and hey, I'm going to make, yeah, but stocks are my favorite asset class, because stocks are tricky. And all these humans, they're going to suffer. And I'd love to see them suffer. Makes me laugh. That's the devil. So this podcast is about, well, you know, how does the devil do this? Now, I call it stock slaves. He enslaves us. And as I say, you don't have to believe in God. You know, just if you don't believe in God, you believe in something. You believe in ignorance, right? You believe in something bad. If you don't believe in God, I guess you believe in, say, human reason. And if you believe in human reason as a good thing, then you believe ignorance is a bad thing. Ignorance, and so I use the word slave because it suggests in the United States, we've had a, 200-some-year battle with racial prejudice, right? I think we're all on the same page that slavery was not the best idea we ever came up with. Not the best idea we ever came up with. You know, my boys and me were watching those Civil War documentary, Ken Burns. I saw it years ago, but I'm watching it now with my boys at night. Not the best idea that ever occurred to us. Now, something, you know, when I see something like that, you know, you hear the story, slavery and all the things that happened, and everybody knows. People died. You know, all these people died. And it's, you know, it's still a problem today, but it's not what it was. But, you know, it's so easy to get superior and say, oh, you know, rotten, crummy, stupid, dumb, you know, smelly, bad-dressing people believed in slavery, you know, but all the good people, no. Well, that's not the way it was. They, you know, there aren't that many stupid, ignorant, smelly, poor-dressing, you know, Perry Como-listening people, you know, to get slavery, adopted. It's not enough of them. They don't have a big lobby, that group. Like, not many people sign up for that lobby. They get in because there were lots of good, sweet, hardworking, honest people that sort of, well, you know, slavery wasn't their idea. You know, it wasn't like they sat in a room and said, hey, let's have slaves. You know? But other people had them, and they sort of grew up around them, and they said, well, maybe it's not that bad. You know, I mean, slavery is kind of, I don't know, it's kind of yucky, but humans are the rationalizing animal. So they rationalized. Lots of good people rationalized. You know, who was it? Thomas Jefferson had slaves. You know, all this great language, freedom, liberty, all this. But when it came to slaves, you know, freedom and liberty's out the door. Because he's a rationalizer. Smart guy, I understand. Just like these investing experinos, but flawed, one of the humans. Thomas Jefferson was a human. So this theme has sort of been there. This theme has been in our discussions. I remember, I don't recall exactly when this happened, but it's come up from time to time. I remember one time, I think it was when I was banned at No Fee Boards. The first time I was banned there. I was banned and brought back and then banned again. And then the whole board collapsed. So I should go through the history sometime. That'll be another sermonizing one. But anyway, I think it was the day I was banned. I think this is what happened. And at Motley Fool, the ban had not been announced. I think this is what had happened. They, you know, El Supremo didn't want to announce it. And so it happened. And the goons were suspicious. They thought there was a ban. And they were writing at Motley Fool that they thought there was a ban, and I wanted to tell them the story, the facts, but I couldn't because I was banned there too. And so I went under this other name. I went under, and I had to pick a name. And I said, what name am I going to pick? So I said, I'll pick Sam Cooke, because Sam Cooke, the singer, had a song called A Change Is Going to Come. And it was a song about slavery. Well, a song about racial prejudice. You know, change is going to come. The 60s. I think it was early 60s, probably. A pretty beautiful song. A Change Is Gonna Come. And I was establishing this theme that, you know, what we're talking about here, I was banned at these places for one crime and one crime only. I am the person, I am the first person that I know of who reported that the safe withdrawal rate studies, the studies that all financial planners, just about 90% of financial planners use to help us plan our retirements, get all the numbers wrong. Not a good thing. Not what you're aiming to do. And I told the world that back May 13th, 2002 at Motley Fool. And that set off a nuclear explosion that continues to this day. I told people. I reported the numbers. I'm not allowed to do that, Rob. So a change is going to come. The point was, we've always had lots of people interested in learning the realities of stock investing, going back to the first day, always. Always. But we've also always had people angry as hornets that somebody would dare to tell the truth about stock investing. Angry. Angry. Hate. Intense. And, the whole thing, it's a violation of the American way of life. We have something called the First Amendment, and I think people forget why we have it. You have to go back and read those Thomas Jefferson documents. We've got the First Amendment, you know, not just to help the newspaper industry. There's an idea there that we have to stay open to different points of view. You have to be tolerant of different points of view. And that's, you know, I think that's a good thing. I'm a journalist, so it's sort of in my blood. But it's important. And, you know, we don't have the First Amendment to protect majorities. Majorities take care of themselves. You don't need it. We have the First Amendment to protect minorities. And that's, of course, what we have. When you have a bull market, by definition, the majority is investing recklessly. If the majority weren't investing recklessly, you wouldn't have an insane bull market. Stocks wouldn't be valued at 3x fair value. So by definition, when you get to a point where the safe withdrawal rate is 2%, most people aren't going to want to hear it. They're going to want to hear it's 4%. That, by definition, it can't happen any other way. So the First Amendment says you've got to, you know, if somebody threatens to kill you because you tell the truth, because you give accurate numbers, well, we're going to protect you. Our government's going to step in. But the government didn't step in. Government let it happen. And all these companies that had, you know, Motley Fool and Morningstar, they have language in their rules saying, you know, we'll let people post honestly on investing. But when push comes to shove and someone reports the retirement numbers accurately, no, then, you know, it's a different story. They don't honor these promises. So it's a violation of the American way of life, says Rob Bennett. Now, as slavery was a violation of American standards, because, you know, we've got it right there in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, you know, our founding documents, you know, all men are created equal. Sort of goes against the grain to have slaves, doesn't it? Isn't that, you didn't have to be, how many times do I make the point where I say, the problems with investing today are not intellectual problems. It's not a math problem. It's not like people aren't smart enough to understand that buy and hold doesn't work. It's not an intellectual problem. There's never been an intellectual debate in 7.5 years. It's that they don't want to admit it. Well, same thing with slavery, you see. It wasn't hard for, you know, Supreme Court justices. What did they say? Dred Scott decision, all these things. It wasn't like they couldn't figure out that there was something wrong with slavery. They could figure it out. They didn't get to the Supreme Court without being able to figure it out. But they didn't want to say it. If they say it, the slaves have to be freed. And if the slaves have to be free, oh, well, I can't do that. You know, that's. And it's true. It was true that freeing the slaves, you know, was going to cause troubles. I mean, you know, the people that were raising pragmatic points of order were not totally wrong. Freeing the slaves led to lots of problems, including problems for the slaves, because, you know, they hadn't, you know, because they had been slaves, they hadn't gotten education. So, you set them loose, and now they don't have, you know, what's their livelihood going to be, you know? In other words, all kinds of problems. So the proper way to do it was sort of to work together as a community and say, look, we have to change this problem. We have to fix this problem and do it. But we never did that, did we? It ended up in a war. We sort of forced it, you know, but we had a lot of dead bodies piled up in mounds, as Lou Reed pointed out one time. Wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to solve things that way? We could just sort of get together on the internet, form a community, change. Change is going to come. Now, when I make this analogy to slavery, people are going to say, well, and I've had this happen. People say, well, you know, it seems it's so over the top. You know, are you comparing not being able to post honestly about safe droids to slavery? Now, it's not the same thing, and I don't say it is. I say that there are similarities. I don't say it's the same thing. It's obviously not the same thing. But there are more similarities than many people are willing to acknowledge. One, the biggest difference is that the investing question is a money issue. So you're talking about money. With slavery, you're talking about human freedom, human dignity. So different categories. They're not just, you know, it's not just that one is bigger than the other. It's that they're different categories. So there's a sense in which the comparison is indeed insulting, and I acknowledge that. I agree with that. But there's another sense in which it's not so much. And that is that money, a dominant theme at my blog, A Rich Life, and at the site, passionsaving.com, is that money is not just money. Money, the idea of a rich life is we're not just going to tell you how to, you know, have a bigger bank book. We're telling you how to live your life, live a more fulfilled life. That's the goal. That's why we seek financial freedom, to leave the mark of our personality on the world. And so that's what the slaves wanted. That's what they wanted their freedom for, to live fulfilled, dignified lives. And so their freedoms were taken away in a more basic way than being denied the freedom to post honestly on safe withdrawal rates on the internet. It's not the same. But there's that similarity in that we're not just talking about dollars here. We really are talking about, well, what do people use financial freedom for? They use it to something I bring up. When we suffer these financial losses that have been caused by the reckless promotion of buy and hold for 30 years after the academic research showed it can never work in the real world, people suffer failed marriages. Well, that's a form of slavery. You know, if you've ever seen people close to divorce, you know what I'm talking about. It's a painful, painful thing to live through. Children can't go to college because their parents have lost all their money. You know, in these reckless investing, get-rich-quick schemes. Buy and hold, I'm talking about. People have to work for abusive bosses. I've had people write me. I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I stared at the wall for 20 minutes. And then I went on the internet and plugged in Paths to Financial Freedom and found your website. You know, thank you for doing what you do. I've had to read words from people saying things like that. That's for that person wasn't a slave. The person who wrote that email, she wasn't a slave in the sense that she didn't have freedom to make her own decisions. But she has to have money to eat. And so she's got to go to that job, and I don't know what her circumstances were, but I've heard some awful stories about bosses and things like this. So it's not equal to slavery, but it has a similarity. It's a minor form of it. And so I'm trying to bring home that we're not just talking about dollars and cents here. We are talking about human dignity, human freedom. When we lose the freedom, when we lose money, we lose something real. We suffer. We only have so many years here on planet Earth. And when we go for get-rich-quick schemes, which is what the stock-selling industry is promoting, when they promote buy and hold, there's never been an alternate universe in which evaluations do not affect long returns. Never. So, there's not... They believe, I don't say they don't believe it. I don't say they don't believe it works. But I say there's never been any evidence. They believe it, I think, primarily because they want to believe it. It's a moneymaker. Buy and hold is the biggest, most effective marketing scheme, you know, just in history, I think. And so they want it to be true. And that, you know, I my friend Artie once told me, you know, oh, Rob, you've got to get, Artie believes. But Artie said, oh, you've got to get a peer-reviewed study. I said, what do I need a peer-reviewed study for, Artie? There's been a peer-reviewed study since 1981. Robert Shiller's research is peer-reviewed. Peer-reviewed studies don't change anything if people don't want to hear it. It's like saying during slavery, you know, you've got to prove that the slaves are, you know, capable of, you know, whatever. Yeah, I mean, even to say it would be insulting. Capable of providing for themselves or capable of being citizens. Well, they were dying in the war. So, did that prove it? They were capable of it? So, we don't have to come up with any studies. Peer-reviewed studies. We need to change hearts. We need people to see that getting the numbers wrong in retirement studies hurts humans and other living things in very serious ways. There's another way. There's another comparison to slavery. When we talk about the Civil War, we're talking about slavery where people's, you know, people physically, they didn't have control of their bodies in the sense that, you know, they were directed to do things, you know, pick cotton, and they had to do it. And if they didn't do it, they were whipped, you know, or whatever. But, you know, it's horrifying. Yeah, I don't need to say that. But in the modern age, much of the work we do today, it's a different sort of world. Much of the work we do is intellectual work. It's work we do with our minds, creative work. Of some nature. Well, you know, most of, I mean, not all of us, but most of us. Some of us still do physical labor, and some of us it's a mix. But there's usually some intellectual labor to most work done today. Some, you know, I mean, even if you're a, you know, if you literally dig ditches, that's physical work, but if you're a surveyor, you're obviously doing intellectual work. If you're a cable repairman, there's intellectual work involved. If you're a cabbie, there's intellectual work. You know, they've got all these calls coming in, and you got to, I mean, sometimes I'm amazed by it. You know, you got 15 calls coming in from all sorts of directions. You got to know which streets to take to get there quickest. And, you know, it's not purely physical labor. It's not. So if we live in a time where intellectual labor is the focus, well, what is happening to us if our ability to use our intellect has been denied us? And that's what's happened in the investing field. We have had hundreds of people offer constructive insights on rational investing who are not permitted to share those insights on the internet. When they've tried, they've had these groups of organized thugs follow them from site to site, from blog to blog, to attack their name, to destroy them, destroy their businesses, threaten them, threaten physical violence. You know, a big example of this is this guy, radiology doctor, great poster at the nofeeboards.com. And radiology doctor had done lots of research, you know, in the early days, helping us with the safe patrol question. And, you know, after the threats of physical violence were put forward, he went in and changed one of his studies. It was a study showing that it was a standard deviation analysis of the historical data showing that it's not true that 4% is safe. That if the assumption of those studies that for the first time in history valuations will have zero effect on long-term returns, if that assumption turns out, then 4% is safe. But the standard deviation analysis showed that the odds of that assumption proving out are 1 in 740. So the right way to say it is not a 4% withdrawal rate is safe. The right way to say it is there's a 1 in 740 chance that 4% is safe. Big difference. And radiology doctor went in when these threats came forward and changed the study without telling anyone, but I knew because I had a copy. I had made a copy in my files of the original, and when he changed it, I went back and compared the language, and I saw he just changed this language so that he would not be attacked on the internet. He would not be destroyed because he had reported accurately what his findings were. Well, he was putting intellectual effort into learning something for the benefit of the entire community, and he was being pressured through threats of physical violence to report things different than what he believed. Is that not a form of slavery? He's not being forced to work in the fields, but he's being forced to report things he doesn't believe. And how many have done that? Thousands have put up smears, deceptions on the internet because it is not permitted to engage in honest, warm, back and forth discussion on these questions. That's a form of slavery. I think, and you know, it's not the same thing. Don't say it is, but I do see a similarity there. I see a serious problem there. Now, what makes this particularly relevant today, the reason that I sort of broke down, I've been thinking of doing the podcast for some time, and I sort of broke down, and this is the way they usually go. I have a long list, and something happens, and I say, I've got to do it now. Well, I had three recent discussions on the question of, there are more and more people who are telling me, Rob, your stuff is amazing. The stuff at this website is just... one guy, Larry, he's a site visitor to the site, and I've exchanged some emails with him, and he used a phrase? Very kind. Beyond awesome. Beyond awesome. And it was very kind. Please understand, I don't claim full credit. I'm happy if people want to give me credit for having done something good, I'm happy to hear it. You know, like all humans, I like to hear praise, but I always like to say there are hundreds of people who have contributed. I wish, you know, I can't name them all, but I've named them at various times, but, you know, the post archives show it, and I wish they all could get credit. But, you know, right now, they all have to act ashamed of what they've done, and I find that shameful. But, you know, let's say Larry is my friend. I mean, you know, we're not close personal friends. We're, you know, just barely know each other, but he's clearly friendly, you know, if he says beyond awesome. But we've had some email discussions about some issues. And he's uncomfortable, or at least he has been in the past. I don't think so much today, but he has been uncomfortable with the fact, I can't spell it out. The thing that makes people uncomfortable, I know what it is. I can spell it out. It's, here's what I do that rubs a lot of people the wrong way. A lot of people will, John Walter Russell, you know, he's been my partner developing the calculators. And I mentioned in yesterday's podcast that John died recently. Very sad. But John did something different than me. There were times when we would post together. You know, we posted together at No Fee Boards. And I was banned, and John was not. And this was so bizarre because the two of us were working together, you know. And I was banned. So I'm not only, you know, persona non grata. I mean, I'm so bad, I'm just banned. Never posted abusively, of course. But banned. And John is not, and people would come to him every day. All the people who insisted on the ban, not all of them, but a lot of the people who insisted on the ban of Rob Bennett would come to John and say, John, that's fantastic, you know, work, you know, amazing. So they're thanking him, and they're banning me. I mean, there's a disconnect. What's the disconnect? The disconnect is there's something that I did. You know, you got to say, well, what did Rob do that John didn't do? We're saying the same thing. In a sense, he was worse because... You know, I would say this stuff conceptually, and he would prove it with numbers. So there's a sense in which he was more of a threat than I was. A significant sense. And he's the one that proved it. I mean, I'm the one who said it, but I sort of said it because it sounded to me like it had to be true. But then he proved it. I didn't prove it. I can't do these numbers stuff. So what did I do different? Well, there's one thing I did that John never did. Or rarely did. He did actually end up doing it, but he rarely did it. I use the words, what was the phrase I always use? The safe withdrawal rate studies get all the numbers wrong. Get all the numbers wrong. Or the phrase I would use is analytically invalid. The old school safe withdrawal studies are analytically invalid. That's why I was banned. That's the line. You can't say they're wrong. And I've seen so many people go through mental gymnastics not to use those words. Bill Bernstein, you can't have a better example. I think I said earlier in this podcast, I was the first person to say that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically invalid, that they get all the numbers wrong. Well, I said that the morning of May 13th. Bill Bernstein said that in a book, The Four Pillars of Investing, that was published April 1, 2002, 6 weeks before. I wasn't aware of it at the time I put my post, but I learned about that book shortly thereafter and then went back and got a copy of the book. And Bill Bernstein says that those studies, you know, he says the safe withdrawal rate is 2% at the top of the bubble, which is just what John Walter Russell says and just what I say. Same message. So why isn't Bill Bernstein banned? He's a hero to these people. Never banned. The difference is Bill Bernstein, if you read it carefully, there's no conclusion you can draw except he thinks the safe withdrawal rate study's got the numbers wrong. They're analytically invalid. But he never used the words analytically invalid. He never used the words got the numbers wrong. So that's considered okay. I mean, if anything could be crazier, I don't know what it would be, but that is the line. That's the line you're not allowed to cross. That's the social taboo. You can say, and so this is what my friend Larry was telling me. He's saying, again, most of these things are not spelled out carefully, but this is the message he was trying to convey. He was saying, Rob, you know, the stuff you're doing is just mind-blowing. I mean, Larry basically said he intends to spend a lot of energies. He's thinking of starting his own website, you know, pursuing this stuff. This is just so important. He acknowledges. But he says, Rob, you know, drop the John Graney stuff. You know, what is it with you? You know, I mean, he's not a goon. You know, he's a kind man. And I've got to, and we went back and forth. And in the end, he never said, you're right. He never went quite that far. But in the end, he said, after we went back and forth, we had several emails go back and forth. And I, of course, always write long emails. He finally said, I can understand where you're coming from. That's about as far as he could go. You know, he said, I'm not going to criticize you. You make some good points. He's not personally going to go that route, is my impression. John Walter Russell, I don't think, really went that route. You know, as I say, John would put out his research. He did use the words, they are wrong. He ultimately got to a point where he'd say, the old school safe withdrawal studies are wrong. But he wouldn't, you know, I go back to it. I mean, to me, it's sort of a theme that I just beat on and beat on. And with John, he'd say it once, and then his feeling was, go on to other things. The difference there is that it's a question of focus. You know, what's the real problem? I think John thinks the problem is people don't understand the numbers. And he's right. People don't understand the numbers. It's true. So John's work is, you know, the most, I've said Early Retirement Planning Insights is the most important website on the internet, in my belief. Because John shows that it's irrefutable evidence. But I don't think that's the most important issue. I think it's an important issue. The most important issue is, because if it had been the most important issue, John's site would not only be the most important one on the internet today, it would be the most popular. Everybody would be linking to it. Everybody and his brother would be sharing. So my question is always, why aren't they sharing? And the reason they aren't sharing is they don't want to know. Millions and millions of middle-class investors and 90% of the people who are characterized as investing, quote, experts, don't want to know how investing works. Because why? Not because they're dumb, not because they want to lose all their money, not because they're bad people, because they are stock slaves. They are emotionally invested in stocks. They have believed in buy and hold for years now, decades. They've told all their friends. They invested their own money. They've written books. They've written calculators. They can't stand to admit they were wrong about this any more than people who had slaves at the time of the Civil War could step forward and say, you know what? This was a mistake. I was wrong. It's hard. So if the question is, Rob, you know, shouldn't you be a little more kind to the people who made this mistake? The answer is yes. You can't be kind enough. We should all be kind. The only question where I cause friction is if they say, Rob, shouldn't you just shut up and not say anything? Then I say, no. If we don't say anything about slavery being wrong, the problem is going to continue to eat away at the social fabric of this country. Well, the slavery one has been worked out after a lot of deaths. But the buy and hold one, the passive investing one, has not been worked out. We are destroying our economic system. We are destroying our political system because people have lost so much money. They're losing confidence in their political leaders. And we have to start telling people the truth about stock investing as revealed by Robert Shiller's research in 1981. We have to take that step. It sounds like a small step, but it's not. It's a very, very big step. And if we had taken it in 1982, it wouldn't have been that big a step. It would have been easy. Everybody would have just said, hey, what a dummy I am. I thought the market was immediately efficient. Turns out it's only gradually efficient. Buy and hold isn't the best strategy. It's the worst strategy possible. What a dumb cuff. And that would have been the end of it. It wouldn't have hurt anybody. But by ducking it, we made it this monster that is eating the U.S. economy, destroying the wealth of the middle-class American. We got, you know, is there any other way to do it other than to say it? I don't know of any other way. There is no magic wand we can wave and make all this go away. You can ban Rob Bennett from a discussion board, sure. But it doesn't make, you know, the historical data. You can't ban the historical data. It still says what it says. You can't ban the economic realities. We're still going to have a stock crash. We're still going to have an economic crisis if you promote this gibberish. The only way out is to tell people the truth, and you can't tell people the truth about stock investing if you don't acknowledge that what they've heard for the past 30 years is the opposite of the truth. How do you get there? The only way to get there, yes, you got to get there in charity and love. You got to. You know, or we'll destroy ourselves. But you got to have honesty in it. It's got to be part of the package. You got to say the numbers are wrong. You get a number wrong, you got to admit it. You got to. This is why I can soar ahead of John Bogle and all these others. I don't have the IQ to soar ahead of them in a million years. But I'm not part of the stock selling industry, so I don't have anything vested in all the gibberish. I find out it's wrong, and I go, dum-dee-dum-dum, guess I'll tell the right number, duh. That's all I got to do. And then when I find out the safe withdrawal rate numbers are wrong, I say, dum-dee-dum-dum, if all the safe withdrawal rate numbers are wrong, maybe other stuff wrong too, I should check that out, maybe, duh. And I check it out, and I find out the other stuff's wrong. The asset allocation advice is wrong, and the risk advice is wrong, and you know, everything, pretty much everything. There's a great base. A lot of great insights developed by, you know, all the experts. That, I take it,
John Bogle was right about five things. He was wrong about one thing. I'm going to take the five he was right about and stick it in my model, and that will be good because he was right. I mean, the one thing he got wrong, I would take that out, dum-dee-dum-dum.
Take that part out. What a genius I am. I include all the great stuff, all the gold, and I take out the dum-dee-dum-dum stuff. That's my secret to success. Friends and neighbors. Well, I've had these discussions. I want to wrap it up. As I say, there have been three people. One was Larry. I've had these long emails over the past couple of weeks. And another one is Mike Piper, the owner of the Oblivious Investor blog. And if you've listened to other podcasts, Mike's name has come up before. Good guy, smart guy. Mike banned me. A couple days ago, I don't know, it's Monday, sometime last week, maybe about a week ago. And I think it hurt him. You know, at least things are moving in the right direction, friends and neighbors. It used to be the first time I was banned, Motley Fool, I was banned in Motley. I think that was the first place I was ever banned. And when I was banned, you know, the goons got together and they were singing, "Ding dong, the witch is dead." You know, they were not sad. They were not. They were very, very happy. But Mike Piper was sad. You know, I don't know how many emails we exchanged before he banned me. I mean, dozens. A good number I've posted at the website as blog entries. I don't know how many, 6 or 12, you know, good stuff in those. But there's a whole bunch I haven't, and some of them I have permission to run. I think there might be a couple I don't, but I'm probably going to post more of those in days to come. But there's just so much stuff on my plate I can't get to it. But Mike does not like the idea of banning honest posting in his blog. Does not. He did it, but he does not like it. And Mike had a post once. I forget where it was, but I could track it down. But he had a post once where he pretty much, I think it was at the, Bad Money Advice blog. That's where I believe he said this. And he basically acknowledged that I'm right on the valuation question. And, you know, because the way he didn't explicitly say that, but implicitly, he said, you know, I'm more concerned about these other problems that, excessive fees, you know, and, you know, people trying to pick stocks and that kind of thing. And so I'm just going to focus all my energies on that, and I'm not going to do valuations, you know. So he's not saying it's wrong. He's saying he doesn't want to do it, you see. I think it's fair to say the reason Mike doesn't want to talk about the problems with valuations is it hurts him from a marketing standpoint to tell his readers that they have destroyed their financial futures by following buy and hold, and it helps him in the links department. It hurts him in the links department, you know, to cut ties with, you know, Mel Lindauer and his crowd, so forth and so on. But Mike doesn't want to be in that. You know, one of the things we had was, I think the email just before the ban was, you know, he was talking about Mel Lindauer. And I mentioned the it wasn't Mel Lindauer Mel Lindauer did not directly have death threats. Graney had death threats, and Mel Lindauer was endorsing Graney, saying, you know, and encouraging Graney supporters to come to the Vanguard Diehard Sports. So he did not personally make death threats. But I was talking about death threats, and Mike says, death threats. He's like, I write about personal finance. You know, I can't talk about death threats. And I'm like, hey, Mike, I get your point. I'm with you, man. I write about personal finance. And if you had told me on the morning of May 13th there were going to be death threats because I calculated the safe withdrawal rate accurately, I would have said you're nuts. So I get the point. There shouldn't be, the word death threats and safe withdrawal rates should never appear in the same sentence. But it's a verifiable reality that you cannot post accurate safe withdrawal rate numbers today on the internet and not have the Graney goons come after you. Is that not a fact? Have they not shown up at your blog when I post the accurate numbers? And at other blogs you visit? So I think, you know, my opinion is you write about personal finance as Mike Piper does, and you take on a responsibility to address this problem because it's the biggest problem in personal finance today. The ban on honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other important investment topics is the biggest problem in personal finance today. It caused this economic crisis, and it's the reason we haven't gotten out of it. And if you don't address the economic crisis, you're not talking about the issue because, you know, who are we kidding? If the economy goes into the second Great Depression, you know, what difference is it going to make what fees you pay on your mutual fund? I mean, give me a break. Yes, his points are good. They're well taken. They're also trivial compared to an investment, quote unquote, strategy that is likely going to put the United States in the second Great Depression. And which we know about 30 years academic research, but we can't talk about. Is it a delicate matter to talk about? Yes. Is it hard? Yes. Is it emotionally troubling? Yes. So, you know, if Mike says to me, Rob, this is sort of hard for me to write about, you know, please have patience. I've got to sort of, you know, figure out how to handle this. I'm like, Mike, course. But they also believed the arguments they made in the legislatures and all this thing when they said, well, you know, it's part of the society, you can't change it. They believed that stuff too. In other words, humans are often put in difficult circumstances. I didn't create these circumstances. Mike Piper didn't create them. Carl Richards didn't create them. They're just here. We don't want to have to talk about death threats. We don't want to have to talk about board bannings. We don't want to have to talk about this idiocy. If I could have continued to post at Motley Fool without ever saying John Graney got the numbers wrong, I would have done it. I was a friend of John Graney's. But there comes a time when the pain being caused to your fellow humans is so great, you simply have to speak out. You simply have to speak out. And I think with this economic crisis, things have reached that point. So Carl Richards now, whether he's banned me or not is not clear. He banned me. What happened is I've been posting his blog, and there's a couple buy and hold dogmatics who are upset that I'm, you know, reporting the problems with buy and hold. And so, you know, he banned me on, Friday? And then we had all these emails back and forth. And he said, well, I didn't really mean to ban you. I wanted to discuss this with you, and your email didn't work for whatever reason. And, you know, so I want to have this conversation with you. So then we had the conversation. And he said in one of the emails he was going to unban me, but that hasn't actually happened yet, so I am not sure. I mean, you know, what's going to happen, I don't know. I think it's 50-50. But if he hasn't banned me yet, he's probably going to ban me down the road because he doesn't want, again, I think it's a marketing thing. He doesn't want people mad at him. And if I tell the truth about stock investing at his blog, people are going to be mad at him. That's a fact. That's true. He's not making that up. Mike Piper didn't make it up. It's true. Motley Fool didn't make it up. Morningstar didn't make it up. People are angry. If you tell the truth about stock investing in the year 2009, people are going to be angry because for 30 years, people have been telling them gibberish and they've been trying to believe it. Not really believing it. If they really believed it, it wouldn't matter to them what Rob Bennett said. They just go on with their lives. But they don't really believe it. They sort of kind of, they try to believe it. And so there's you know, there's defensiveness. There's fear. There's anger. There's shame. And I stir this up. And I don't say that it's an accident. It's deliberate. I don't want to cause the pain, but I want to say the truth about stock investing. You know, the little woman who started the big war, you know, was it Harriet Tubman or Harriet Beecher Stowe, I guess? You know, I want to tell the true story. I want to write Uncle John's Cabin, Uncle Tom's Cabin. That's what I'm about. I'm a journalist. I want to tell the true story as I see it. I'm not God. I don't see everything perfectly. But I don't intend to write a whitewash. I intend to write. I hope that I write with charity. Always, I hope. That's my job. I hope I write a balanced presentation. But I'm not going to write that, you know, I'm going to write John Bogle's done wonderful things. He's a hero, the first rank. We couldn't have any of these evaluation-informed indexing without John Bogle. But I am going to write that John Bogle sat on his hands while Mel Lindauer led the most vicious smear campaign in the history of the internet against the Vanguard diehards community. And did not, you know, John Bogle did nothing. And that's sad. I don't like it. But it's a fact. It's verifiable. It's in the Post archives. And Carl Richards is going to have to decide where he wants to stand on that. And he's, you know, our discussions end it with him saying, you know, I said, look, I'm going to have to write a blog entry, Carl. Because Carl, in one of his emails, he wrote some glowing stuff about my website and the work I've done. You know, what was it he said? The work you are doing is of huge importance or huge value. Something like that. And there were other things he said. So I basically said, can I quote you, Carl? You know, I want to quote you. Oh, no. Off the record. It's off the record. Well, it wasn't off the record when he said it, but he says it's off the record. Well, you can't make it off the record retroactively. It doesn't work that way. But, you know, I agreed not to quote everything he said because he was writing it in an email, and I don't think he intended it. You know, he wasn't thinking it was going to be used for that purpose. So, you know, he may have said things. If you know, you write things in an email, and if you know it's going to be published, you might say it differently. You might be more cautious in how you say it. So I don't think it's right to use all his words. But I said I need to use a couple words to get the flavor. And I said the words I'm going to use are, you know, this thing about huge importance and or huge value. I don't remember what the phrase was. And I said, if you have any reservations about my work that you want to add, I will include them in the blog entry I write up, Carl. I don't know that you have any, but if you do, they should be in there. That's part of the story. But he either doesn't have any or doesn't want to share them, but he just doesn't want anybody to know that he loves my website. He's told me, I can't say everything he said. I've agreed not to, but he loves my website. And I had that same experience with Bill Schultheis, you know, author of the new Coffee House Portfolio. He sent me this thing. Holy Toledo, this is amazing. The stuff at this website. And then, put that up at the website, and all of a sudden, you know, he doesn't want anything to do with the discussions. You know, why would somebody love somebody's website and not want anybody to know it? Well, if the somebody's website who you love, you know, has told the truth about safe withdrawal rates 7 years ago, and all these leading figures in the field have either participated in or tolerated a campaign of terror to block middle-class investors from learning about it, I guess maybe that would be problematic. Well, it shouldn't be. Bill Schultheis should be able to say what he believes. Carl Richards should be able to say what he believes. Mike Piper should be able to say what he believes. Mel Lindauer should be able to say what he believes. John Bogle should be able to say what he believes. John Graney should be able to say what he believes. Rob Bennett should be able to say what he believes. Everybody should be able to say what they believe about investing. Everybody should be able to say what they believe about investing. True or false? The American way says that's true. So, that's where, you know, what Carl says is, oh, Rob, trying to start a fight. Well, I'm not trying to start a fight. I'm trying to end the fights. Once everyone comes forward and says, yes, of course, we all should be saying what we believe, for heaven's sakes. How can we ever give good advice on investing if we don't say what we believe? If we believe in passive investing, we should say that. If we believe in rational investing, we should say that. If we believe in conventional indexing, we should say that. If we believe in valuation-informed indexing, we should say that. But I don't think this situation can stand where we can say what we once believed before Shiller's research came out, and we can't say what some of us have come to believe since his research came out and since we explored the implications of it. I don't think that can stand. And I want to work with all these people to make the transition as smooth as it can be. But I want that transition to take place. I don't want to suggest any lack of resolve on that point. Because the U.S. economy and possibly the U.S. political system hang in the balance. Certainly the U.S. economy hangs in the balance. Another stock crash, which is likely, given the historical data, if we continue down this road, another stock crash will probably land us in the second Great Depression. And the given what's happening in our political system today, moving into the second Great Depression is going to cause serious problems politically. Not just for both parties, you know. Democrats, Republicans, independents, everything. Americans. So, we are stock slaves. We gave in to the get-rich-quick impulse when we tried to persuade ourselves that prices didn't matter. We really did believe it. Lots and lots and lots of evidence of that. Lots of evidence of that. We really believed it because we really wanted to believe it. The devil made us do it. We are trapped in the devil's logic, trapped in the devil's lair, and we need to overcome. We are enslaved. We have enslaved ourselves. We have lost our humanity. When you look at the ugliness we have seen, we have given up significant parts of our humanity, our kindness, our honesty, our warmth, our friendliness, our rationality. These are human traits. And when we give these things up, we give up a lot. When we give these things up, we do something worse than just get the numbers wrong in retirement studies. We sacrifice our humanity. I believe this. I'll leave it at that. I always sign off many of my posts that way. I say, my sincere take. other words, I believe this. You don't have to believe it, but I do. And I think if you look at the record, you'll see that there's a strong case that this is a matter we're going to have to deal with as a society, with love. With love. Love is the answer. But with honesty, too. Honesty is also the answer. Honesty is a part of the answer. We have to stop being stock slaves. And on the other side of this slavery is a wonderful world of insights into how stock investing really works. The golden age of middle-class investing awaits us on the other side of this black mountain. So Rob Bennett believes. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.